Welcome to Shir 39, and in this lecture we will introduce the mitzvos of Shemitah and Yovel, and there are a lot of psukim to quote, so we're going to read them all straight in English. So first, we're going to see Shemos 23, 10 and 11. The Torah says, "You may plant your land for 6 years and gather its crops, but during the seventh year, you must leave it alone and withdraw from it. The needy among you will then be able to eat from your fields, just as you do, and whatever is left over can be eaten by wild animals. This also applies to your vineyard and your olive grove." Next we have Vayikra 25, 1 through 7. Hashem spoke to Moshe at Har Sinai, telling him to speak to Bnei Yisrael and say to them, "When you come to the land that I am giving you, the land must be given a rest period, a Shabbos to Hashem. For 6 years, you may plant your fields, prune your vineyards, and harvest your crops. But the seventh year is a Shabbos of Shabbos to the land. It is Hashem's Shabbos, during which you may not plant your fields, nor prune your vineyards. Do not harvest crops that grow on their own, and do not gather the grapes on your unpruned vines, since it is a year of rest for the land. What grows while the land is resting may be eaten by you, by your male and female slaves, and by the employees and resident hands who live with you. All the crops shall also be eaten by the domestic and wild animals that are in your land." So now we're going to go a little further to 20 through 22. "In the seventh year, you might ask, 'What will we eat? We have not planted, nor have we harvested crops.' I will direct my blessing to you in the sixth year, and the land will produce enough crops for 3 years. You will therefore be eating your old crops when you plant after the eighth year. You will still be eating your old crops until the crops of the ninth year are ripe." Now we go on to Devarim 15, Psukim 1 and 2. "At the end of every 7 years, you shall celebrate the remission year. The idea of the remission year is that every creditor shall remit any debt owned by his neighbor and brother when God's remission year comes around." Okay, and now we're going to move to 12 through 15. "When your fellow Hebrew man or woman is sold to you, he may serve as much as 6 years, but in the seventh year, you must send him away free. When you send him away free, do not send him empty-handed. Give him a severance gift from your flocks, from your threshing floor, and from your wine vat, so that he will have a share of all the things through which God your Lord has blessed you. You will thus remember that you were a slave in Mitzrayim, and God your Lord liberated you. It is for this reason that I am commanding you today to do this." Okay, so as we've discussed in the past, the aim of the plant-related dietary laws, and specifically those that are related to Eretz Yisrael, is to influence the personality of the Jew and to strengthen his ethical qualities. These aims come to life in the mitzvos of Shemitah, which is produce of the seventh year, and Yovel, which is the 50th year. These mitzvos form an integral part of a religious social system, which is the basis of the Torah state. During Shemitah, the land must not be worked, and an Eved Ivri is set free, and at the end of the seventh year, all debts are canceled. So it comes out that we have Shemitas Karkos, land release, and Shemitas Kesafim, money release. Shemitas Karkos, land release, is one of the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz, meaning that the Jewish people must possess the land, and we also need to determine what level of holiness the land has, which is called Kiddushas Ha'aretz. Money, on the other hand, is a mitzvah haguf. It is one's personal duty, and even though these two categories are different, they share a connection. The money release takes place at the end of the year, and the land applications, those come into force in the beginning of the year. During the year, every stalk in the field proclaims that God is the master and owner of the soil. And the money release at the end of the year, so that brings to life the fact that every coin that we possess and every legal claim that we have, in reality, it all belongs to God. So after 7 cycles, at the end of 49 years, the 50th year is Yovel, which causes a 2-year period when the land needs to lie fallow and hereditary property reverts back to the original owner or the heirs. The idea behind this compulsory return of the land is that God owns the land and that we the people only hold the land in trust. And the Torah tells us this explicitly. The Torah says, V'ha'aretz lo simacher litzmisus ki li ha'aretz ki gerim v'su shavim atemi madi. The land should not be sold forever because the land is mine, meaning it's God's, because you are strangers and sojourners with me. Now, the return of the land has two purposes. It avoids a few people acquiring most of the land, and it has an important psychological aspect in that it prevents one from having the pride and arrogance that is connected with landowners. L'Hashem ha'aretz umloa, the land is God's. This thought creates humility and consideration for the poor. Another commandment in the Torah is Mishpat HaGeula, which is the law of redemption, and the idea behind this mitzvah is similar to Yovel. The Torah in Vayikra 25:24, ending off a discussion of Yovel, tells us, Uvchol eretz achuzeschem geula titenu la'aretz. In all the land of your possession, meaning your ancestral heritage, you should grant redemption for the land. The very next pasuk begins to discuss the law of redemption, the Mishpat HaGe'ula. And this comes from Vayikra 25:25-28. The Torah says, if your brother becomes impoverished and sells some of his hereditary land, a close relative can come and redeem what his kinsman has sold. The same is true if a man does not have anyone to redeem it, but gains enough wealth to be able to redeem it himself. He shall then calculate the number of years for which the land has been sold, and return the balance to the buyer. He could then return to his hereditary land. If he does not have the means to retrieve the land, then that which he has sold shall remain with the buyer until the Jubilee year. It is then released by Yovel, so that the original owner can return to his hereditary land. So if a Jew is forced to sell some of his inherited land due to financial difficulties, it is the obligation of his relatives to redeem it for him. And if his own financial situation improves, he himself should redeem this land. We look at the purchase as a lease, and the original owner deducts a corresponding sum of money for the years when the purchaser had use of the land. The purchaser is receiving only the amount by which the purchase money of the field exceeded the value of the crops reaped by him. This redemption could only take place after a 2-year span of time. If the land is not redeemed, then it will automatically revert back to the original owner, in other words, the person who inherited the land, by Yovel. Now just to point out, if one needs to sell his Sedeh Achuza, his hereditary land, he should only sell what he absolutely must, just a small portion, as small as he can, in order to get by. We have a famous example of this in Nach, in Melachim Aleph, where the king, Ahav, asks Navos to sell him his vineyard. And Navos refuses, and in his response, which you can find in 21:3, he says, Vayomer Navos el Ahav, Chalila li me Hashem, mititias nachalas avusai lach. God has forbidden it to me that I should give you the inheritance of my fathers. And this is not just talk. Navos is refusing to sell the land because the Torah forbids you to sell your inheritance. We find other places in Nach where the mitzvah of redeeming the land for a relative was put into action. So, for example, in Rus Dalad, we have the whole story of the redemption between Ploni Almoni, the Goel, and Boaz. For another example, see Yirmiyah Lamed Beis, where Yirmiyah is commanded to purchase a field since he must do the Mishpat HaGe'ula, which again is the rite of redemption. The mitzvah of Yovel began with a shofar blast on Yom Kippur, and this would restore slaves back to their status as free people, and to the poor, their rights regarding their property. This shows that it is a fundamental concept of Judaism that the religious and social attitudes of man belong together, in that forgiveness between God and man is only on condition that there is forgiveness between man and man. Rav Hirsch writes that the observance of Shemitah is the greatest act on the part of the whole nation of the recognition that God is the sole, one and real owner and master of their country, in that for 1 year they refrain from exercising their rights of ownership on their land. At the same time, Shemitah is a test of our trust in God and in His providential care for Yisrael for all of our economic needs. All of our fate, including our material sustenance, relies solely on God, and this is both in the realm of the individual, the Hashgacha Pratis aspect, and for the entire nation, Hashgacha Kalalis. Every day we say this in the second paragraph of Shema that clearly spells out reward and punishment in the physical world based on our actions. We find the same idea that our fate and our ability to live in Eretz Yisrael depends on our obedience to God, and this is expressed in various places in the Torah, but very specifically in the two Tochachos that tell us that if we keep the Torah, good things happen. If we reject the Torah, that bad things will happen. We believe that the physical universe is dependent on morality, on how we act. And when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, the Torah tells us that rain, the productivity of the soil, and our ability to live in the land are all conditioned on our loyalty to the divine law. And the Torah is very explicit about this. The Torah tells us in Vayikra 25:18, Va'asisem es chukosai, v'esmishmatai tishmeru va'asisem osam, yishavtem al ha'aretz levetach. Right, if you do my commandments, then you'll dwell in the land safely. And we're warned in Vayikra 18:28, V'lo saki ha'aretz eschem, b'tama'achem osach ka'asher ka'as hagoy asher lifneichem. But if you don't keep the Torah properly, the land's going to vomit you out, just like it did to the nations that were there before you. Okay, so the rest is very hashgafic. It's probably best to read it inside. There may not always be conformity within the limited vision of the human eye and of man's understanding between the moral and the physical aspects of the universe. Nature's laws do not always seem to follow the moral law. Thus, the stolen seed grows, and the deeds of the wicked often prosper for a while. For how long is God's secret? Nevertheless, as the English historian J. A. Fraud said, one lesson, and only one, history may be said to repeat with distinctness, that the world is built somehow on moral foundations, that in the long run, it is well with the good, in the long run, it is ill with the wicked. This is especially true in the case of Israel's history and its connection with the Holy Land, on which the eyes of the Lord are set from the beginning of the year to its end. And that, of course, is a pasuk. There is a special conformity and interdependence between the natural and the moral law in Israel, and the very land itself revolts against immorality and lawlessness. On this, the Torah is very insistent. The corollary to this teaching of the Torah is that the produce of the Holy Land is not only conditioned by agriculture and other physical elements, but by the moral factor of Yisrael's obedience to the laws of God. This becomes very clear in the laws of the sabbatical year, whose aim is to show us God's providence and to ensure our trust in Him. The Torah tells us, in the seventh year, you might ask, what will we eat? We have not planted, nor have we harvested crops. Hashem says, I will direct my blessings to you in the sixth year, and the land will produce enough crops for 3 years. You will therefore be eating your old crops when you plant after the 8 years. You will still be eating your old crops until the crops of the ninth year are ripe. This divine promise concerning the sabbatical year also applies to the Shabbos day. See that the Lord has given you the Shabbos. Therefore, He gives you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Thus, Shabbos, the sabbatical year, and the Yovel not only introduce morals, but also metaphysics into economics. The laws of Shemitah and of Yovel follow from the fundamental concept of Shabbos, hence the expression the sabbatical year, Shinas Shabboson. It is no coincidence that in Shemos, where the law of Shemitah is first mentioned, it is immediately followed by a reference to the law of the Shabbos, for there is an intimate connection between the idea of the Shabbos of the week, Shabbos Bereishis, and the Shabbos of the land, Shabbos Haaretz. Okay, so when it comes to Shabbos, one day a week, we renounce everything which shows our control of natural objects and forces. So we cease from every act of human power in order to proclaim Hashem as the source of all power. By refraining from human creativity on Shabbos, the Jew pays homage to God. And this is why the Torah forbids malacha. So malacha is any act that shows man's mastery over the world by the constructive use of his intelligence and his skill. However, Hashem is not just the creator of the universe. He's also the guide of history. And when we say Kiddush, we actually mention both of these. One idea that Shabbos represents is that it's Zecher L'Maaseh Bereishis for creation. And the other one is that it's Zecher L'Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the Maaseh Bereishis aspect, that shows us that God created the universe. And the Yetzias Mitzrayim shows us that God runs history. Moreover, the fact that man was created in the image of God gives dignity to each individual soul and freedom to each person's personality to choose between good and evil. And this is also expressed through the concept of Shabbos. Without Shabbos, man would be nothing more than a working machine. Now, to connect this to Shemitah, the Torah tells us that the land should keep a Shabbos to God. What the Shabbos day is to the individual in the world, the Shabbos year is to the nation in Eretz Yisrael. However, while the purpose of the Shabbos day is the proclamation of God as the creator and master of the universe as a whole, the aim of Shemitah is the proclamation of God as the ultimate owner of Eretz Yisrael. Now, this difference will show itself in a practical manner in terms of the type of melacha which is forbidden on Shabbos compared to the type of melacha that is forbidden during Shemitah. So as we would expect, the type of work which is usher on the Shabbos day itself is much broader than that of the agricultural work which is forbidden during the Shemitah year. So this concludes Shir 39 on the introduction of Shemitah and Yovel. And next time, we will discuss some of the halachos of Shemitah.